So, welcome to week five of the meta course. We're going to add a new category to the people we've been working with again today. So far, we've worked with ourself, with our benefactor, with our dear friend, with a neutral person. These are progressively a little more difficult, a little more complicated, and now we add in another track. Another layer of the teaching. And traditionally, 2,000 years ago, this category was called the enemy, which made sense in a tribal culture of 2,000 years ago, but doesn't make so much sense in contemporary Western world. And we changed this, and you see this in Western teaching as the difficult person. And then more recently, I heard someone call this someone with whom I have difficulty. This acknowledges that it isn't the person that's the problem. It's not their fault. It's that you are particularly and unpleasantly reactive around this person. It's your stuff, in other words. And I like this because it acknowledges that it's about us, this practice, not about them. And it takes out the wagging finger energy of the ideas of difficult person. So, as I was saying, this difficult person is someone who we typically don't get along with. Someone who we react to with ill will, with anger, with fear, with frustration, who knows, some variety of unpleasant emotional state. And there's also feelings of judgment, blame, And almost always, in fact, probably always, there are stories in our head we tell about ourselves, about this person and us and how we don't get along, and those stories always have some unwholesome energy involved with them, some unwholesome emotional energy there, whether it's, plain old ill will, or it could be anger, like I said, it could be fear, it could be blame, it could be judgment. It's like they make my life miserable, those rotten people. It can go that far pretty easily. And so the whole idea here is we're trying to shift our reactive energy to this person to one of goodwill, which is a pretty radical idea, I think, actually. I want to share something. There's this wonderful book I've been going back to lately. It's called Happiness is an Inside Job by Sylvia Wirstein. And I want to talk a little bit about Sylvia just because. When I first encountered her, this is over 20 years ago, my first long retreat, she was one of the teachers. And the teachers were sort of more, vaguely ex-hippie type people like me. And Sylvia comes sitting on the stage. She's got a twin set, an ankle-length skirt, and pearls, and her hair's permed. I mean, it's like, what's my grandmother doing up there, right? It's like I couldn't figure out what the heck she was doing there at all. She's so amazing. She tells these amazing stories, and the stories is like she's teaching and she's talking about something that went on with one of her grandchildren or something, like, but she turns it into a Dharma teaching. It's incredible how she does it. So you'll maybe get a little flavor of that in this section, because I'm going to read a good chunk of what she has to say here, because it's very relevant to this idea of shifting our reactive patterns. The technique of formal practice begins with blessings for oneself and end with blessing for everything alive. One particular phrase in the Metta Sutta, the word, two words, omitting none, seems to me the essential key of the entire teaching. Peace of mind I take it to mean depends on unconditional benevolence. In other words, any antipathy in the mind at all, any contention, obviates personal happiness. Ever notice that when you're caught in those stories about this person, blah, 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 blah? It's never pleasant. It's never a happy time. With happiness as the goal, the technique of systematically blessing everyone the mind can think of routs out hidden aversion and any leftover clinging to grudges. I sometimes say at this point in describing metta practice that it sounds as if I'm taking my mind to the laundry. In fact, it feels that way. Taking your mind to the laundry. It's a great phrase. Huh? What inspires my determination to discover and resolve any hidden animosity in me is my awareness that no matter whom I am thinking of, I myself am always the principal beneficiary of my benevolence. Having my mind in unrestricted caring mode means that my prayers have already been answered. It means that I am free of the suffering of enmity and the danger of remaining unhappy. It means I am fully connected and alive. I love how she's describing. This is what it's like to really be full of metta all the time. I think the psychology of formal metta practice design is brilliant. It works two ways. First of all, repetition of the blessings soothes the tension in the mind clouded by distaste. The kind thoughts that fill the mind cause it, at least for the time it's busy blessing, to stop telling itself inflammatory stories such as, he wronged me, she abused me. We can't bless and simultaneously be imagining retribution and revenge. It would be like trying to drive your car in drive and reverse at the same time. It doesn't work. When the stories fueling the upside mind stop, the mind gets a chance to relax. There's this instruction that you often hear. Think about what's good about this person. It's another part of the practice that some people, I hear sometimes when people are teaching metta. It's like, think of something that's good about this person. Let that be what helps you connect to them. It isn't hard to do, of course, when someone you normally love has annoyed you. There are probably many choices of good things. He brings me coffee in bed in the morning. She is so sweet to my elderly father, endlessly loyal to worthy causes. The mind smiles when it thinks of any of those thoughts, and it relaxes. In a more expansive, relaxed state, it remembers, I'm offended now, but really it's just that I'm startled. We really love each other. May we both be well. It's not hard to think complimentary thoughts about people toward whom I feel reasonably neutral. Whenever the shopkeeper in my small town, who is always helpful and polite, startles me by offering some unsolicited a political opinion completely at odds with mine, I am glad, even eager, to thank him for helping me shop. If I do, I can get in my car and remember his kindness and not replay the story that begins, it's people with views like this, blah, blah. In my mind, if my mind can refrain from vilifying him, which isn't hard to do because, after all, why upset myself? I can continue to feel friendly. Whatever his politics, he is well-mannered, and I like doing business there. By now, I'm sure you've figured out what effortful practice will be. Indeed, when I teach metta, people often stop at me at this point and say, surely you aren't going to expect me to bless, and name some generally agreed-upon bad thought or person. I go on to say that traditional texts call this person the enemy, and I agree that it's difficult, very difficult, to conjure up some mitigating, laudable thing to think about a person whose very name evokes aversion. Can any of you think of such a person these days? I mean, indeed, my colleagues and I teach metta, we normally encourage people to begin with blessings for themselves. well-beloved friends and familiar strangers before taking on people who evoke aversion. And in deference to contemporary mores, we often use the term difficult person rather than enemy when we introduce this part of the practice. Still, the mind balks at the instruction. Think of the good about this person. Are you kidding me? Never. That would be giving in, making that person okay. Of course, it isn't making the person okay at all. It is making your mind startled with defensiveness by the thought of the terribleness of this other person okay. Okay enough to relax. There's always more in anyone's life than the particular thing he or she did or is doing that offends me. By remembering something, he raised two sons alone. She would have been a wonderful singer had her family been able to afford training for her. Or even this political leader whose policies I dislike probably believes he is right, just as I believe I am. I can change someone from a monolithic representation of pain to a human being with whom I at least have one thing in common. We are both doing the best we can. When I can do that, it is I who am immediately better off. I can seriously dislike people or not like what they do and still not make them my enemies. Wishing people well means I've stopped being afraid of them. Isn't that a great line? Wishing people well means I've stopped being afraid of them, stopped holding them, metaphorically speaking, at emotional arm's length. Relieved of some sense of needing to be on the defensive. After all, I'm rarely in danger, even in person with people I don't like, and never in danger in thought. I am changed. Most of the time, I do not start liking people I didn't previously admire. Even if I realize that they are suffering and that they couldn't be different, I still don't like them. What changes for me when my mind drops in its aversion is that I realize, because I keep forgetting and remember to remember again and again, that forgiveness and goodwill are my most reliable refuge. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to change. And it's like, I think it's really important. She emphasizes it doesn't mean with these people that you have to love them or even like them. You just want to wish them well because they're just human beings like you and me, and they just want to be happy. They might go about finding happiness in ways that we find difficult, offensive, whatever words you want to use, but that's in the end, they're just another human being who wants to be happy. That's what it comes down to. That's where we always meet in commonality. And there's no difference between them and me on that level. Anyhow, I love Sylvia. Here's another thought. Loving kindness for a difficult person is an act of forgiveness. And I can see people squirming in their chair, an act of forgiveness. Forgiveness does not mean condoning. It just means that you no longer want to be caught up in these afflictive emotions. You no longer want to be caught in that story about they did this and I did that and they said this and blah, 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 and get all wound again. You're tired of that. And what metta for the difficult person is a way to shift that habitual response. That's all I'm going to say about the forgiveness for now. But next week, all I'm going to talk about is forgiveness. I'm going to give a whole talk just on the practice of forgiveness as part of this metta course. So I'll come back to this theme in a much larger way then. But for now, I just want to make sure that you understand. And it's really important that we understand it's not saying about this person that I like them, that I love them, that I forgive them. It's just like they're a human being. They deserve happiness as much as I do. They deserve to be okay. That's all we're saying. And we also, it's really, it's difficult. This is an interesting thought. We've all had things happen in our lives that have been difficult. You can't live a life without having had to deal with stuff, right? Unpleasant things that people have said or done. And we have all have stories about these people that we repeat over and over again. The thing about these stories is they bind us. They, when we keep telling ourselves these stories over and over again, we're sort of selfing. We're making ourselves, I'm the person who got done wrong by this. It's a way of creating a sense of a separate self over and over and over again with an unpleasant overtone to boot. And so metta for the difficult person is in a sense a way to release yourself from those bonds. Release yourself from being caught yet again in that old story. Oh God, that one again. I mean, how many times have you been caught in the maelstrom of story about someone, and then at the end of it all, when you sort of wake up going, oh God, why did that have to come back yet again? You know, it's just, it seems incredible. Because when we're caught in these afflictive emotions, we're the ones who suffer. Not the other person. The other person doesn't even know we're thinking about them, probably, right? We're the one who always suffers. We're creating our own suffering over and over and over again. And because we're caught in these emotions, sometimes we act out in ways and speak out in ways that cause other people around us to suffer. Just because we're in a bad mood, perhaps. We don't want to let these feelings go, and we don't want to let go of these feelings because they're who I am, and they're sort of like often have this sort of righteous indignation vibe to them as well. They're sort of empowering, like I'm right and they're wrong, and there's that sort of vibe to them as well, and it makes us feel important. We get caught in that place too. Sharon Salzberg has a little bit to say about this. This is from her book, Loving Kindness. When our minds are full of anger and hatred towards others, in fact, we are the ones who are actually suffering, caught in this mind state. But it's not so easy to access that place inside us that which can forgive, which can love. In some ways, to be able to forgive, to let go, is a type of dying. It's the ability to say, I am not that person anymore, and you are not that person anymore. Forgiveness allows us to recapture some part of ourselves that we left in behind in bondage to a past event. Some part of our identity may also need to die in the letting go, so that we can reclaim the energy bound up in the past. Strong words, but I think it's a quite accurate statement too. So basically, what I'm trying to get at is that metta is a way to shift patterns of unwholesome energy to ones that are wholesome. That's what this particular category is about. And I have to tell you, from a personal experience, it really works. I can testify here. I went for a retreat, oh, this is 16 maybe years ago, the first time I really sort of got into doing metta, and I did a month of metta. And there was a particular person who was, at the time, in that time in my life, very difficult. I mean, every time we interacted, we were part of a group of people. And every time this particular person and I interacted, it was like combustion city. It was just like, ugh. And I would always blame her and judge her, and oh my God, what's wrong with her? Never, nothing's ever wrong with me, right? It's all and I did a month of metta, and this person was my difficult person. So for days and days, and then after I came back from doing that month of metta, metta was my only practice for about 3 months, and so this person was in my mind as the difficult person I was working with for quite a while. And my relationship to this person changed quite dramatically. And it's not that she wasn't doing and saying things the way that used to always drive me crazy, but now it's like, oh, that's okay. It's just who she is. I'm okay. And I'd stopped getting hooked by what used to hook me every time, or I'd be off ranting yet again, either internally or sometimes externally to my poor wife or whatever. I stopped doing it. It just didn't get me anymore. I was like, oh, this is interesting. It's really a powerful thing to be able to do. There's one other thing. I also want to tell you a story, and some of you have probably heard me tell this story before. But this is at another retreat I was at where the teacher had spoken the night before about this topic. And the way it works on these retreats is in the evening is the talk, and then the next morning, whoever gave the teacher who gave the talk takes the question and answer period in the morning. And so this is my teacher guy, actually. So he said, "Any got any questions?" And this woman, hand flies up in the air. She says, "I've chosen a particular person to be my difficult person. I'm really trying hard to work with them. But when I visualize them, I have to see them way on the other side of the hall. And this is a big hall. It's like holds 100 people, right? Sitting, there's 100 people on this retreat. So she's on one side, and she's way on the other side of the hall in a chair. They're tied to the chair. And he has a gag in his mouth. And there's sort of nervous laughter runs through the hall, right? And since she says, "Is that okay?" And Guy's answer was two words. Good start. Better that than be caught in what is obviously a situation where all her stories are full of anger and fear towards this person. Better that she connect to as best she can to thoughts of love and kindness with this person, even in that sort of situation. And then gradually, maybe one day, she'll be able to take the gag out of his mouth when she practices. And eventually, even untie him from the chair. Maybe he has to stay in the chair on the other side of the room, not saying he's going to like this person or love them or anything. Just she's released from the story. Good start. And it's true. It just like, I was like, duh. I thought about it like, well, of course. It's exactly the right answer. Better that than anything else. So, how do we choose a person we're going to work with in this category? Person with whom I have difficulty. Well, to be blunt, it should be easy. We all have people like this in our lives, right? I don't know anybody who doesn't have someone, at least one person like this in their life. It's just be part of being human. Is there some people that we just, there's friction. We rub against each other the wrong way and it just creates friction. So here's the most important, you choose a person. And make sure, especially if you've never done this form of practice before, not start by choosing the most difficult person in your life. Don't go there. It's going to be so tempting because, like, oh boy, I finally get the. But it's just, don't go looking for trouble is what that comes down to. So choose someone who's mildly annoying. or however you want to think about it, but not. And also remember, and this is in a broader sense, that what's important here is we're forming the intention to offer goodwill to this person. And this is, here we are, the second step in the Eightfold Path, wholesome intention. We're forming the intention to, instead of being caught in thoughts and stories of ill will, to have thoughts of loving kindness towards this person. That's the intention we're forming. And sometimes, if there's someone who's like, we just can't imagine actually having them in our mind and saying those phrases. And I understand people have had real difficulties in their lives, and there are people like that in some people's lives. Then it's almost like part of your process is, I'm forming the intention that one day I could wish them this. I'm not even ready to wish them that now, but at least I'm forming the intention to do it and say the phrases with that proviso underlying everything you're doing. It's all about intention anyway. It's all about intention. Another thing we have to really watch for with this particular category is, don't expect this practice to solve the difficult relationship. Don't go there at all. Don't think, well, this is how I can finally solve that. In fact, here's what sometimes happens. You, over time, working with metta for this person, you stop being reactive to them. But especially if it's someone you know in your daily life, they're used to that pattern of you being reactive. They might even get off, to be honest with you, on you being reactive to them. And when you stop being reactive to them, when you stop, and it's not like you're going to tell them, "Oh, I'm full of loving kindness for you now." It's just like you're not playing the game anymore. They're going to up the ante. They're going to sort of double down on trying to make you crazy. That's just what happens sometimes, because that's how they make themselves happy, is by getting you to react to them. Yeah. And when you stop doing that, that might be what happens. Don't be surprised if that's the case. And remember, this isn't about changing them at all. It might. It's like, maybe it's like when you stop being reactive, they're going to sort of mellow out. Who knows? That's what happened in my case with this other person. We just didn't get go there anymore. We didn't get caught in those clashes anymore, which was quite pleasant, actually. But remember, it's all about changing your reactive patterns. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to work with our own stuff. This is the person with whom I have difficulties, and I want to not react to those difficulties anymore. I want to become non-reactive towards them. That's the goal. That's all I'm trying to do. Change me. Change my reactive stuff. That's the whole story. So, what are we going to do now? As always, we're going to practice. I want to just. We already did a couple 10 minutes of self, but I just want to do like 2 minutes of self to get back in. I've just unloaded a lot. I'm sure some of your minds are whirling here, right? So let's just do a couple of minutes of self, and then pick either of your benefactor or your dear friend, whichever one is easiest, because we're trying to sort of tune into the meta energy. And we'll work with that person for 5 minutes or so to sort of. So we're getting on a roll here, right? Then we're going to work with the neutral person, because the neutral person is someone that we're not reactive to, but we're not used to thinking about them in this way at all. In that sense, the neutral person and this category are the same. It's not where we normally go in our minds towards these people. So working with the neutral person will get us used to that sense of it's okay to just have thoughts of ill will to this totally random person who I never even noticed before, hardly, let alone had thoughts of goodwill towards them. And then we'll shift. At that point, I'll indicate we'll shift and we'll go to the difficult person. Just like everybody else, we have to be able to, as best we can, visualize the person, connect to the person in some way. It's really helpful if you can think of something, anything. Person drives me totally bonkers, but when I see them with their dog, they're just so nice with their dog. Now you thought of a way in, a good thought about them, right? And think about what these phrases mean for them, because maybe you know them well enough that you know that these phrases mean something totally different for them than they do for you. And so it's important that as we always do, that we tune into the meaning of the phrases, but if the meaning of the phrase is what it means for them, not for you, which might be totally different in some cases. And then we'll just do the practice for this person. With this proviso, if it gets to be to the point where you start doing the practice for this person, and what comes up is that story, and the story starts to really grip you, and all of a sudden there you are in your mind, totally distracted and ranting, just go back to the easiest category. Spend a couple of minutes there. Perhaps it's self, especially if you're getting really wild, self might be a good place to go. But just step back from the practice for the difficult person. Get tuned into the energy of the practice more, and then go back and try again. Which is like I've said this 1,000 times. With meditative practice, this is all we can do. We just start again, start again, start again. So with this one, it's okay to start again several times, perhaps. It's for very normal to want to start again. And so don't feel like you can't, that you have to hang in there. It'd be tough. It's not useful. Just makes everything more miserable, which we're trying to not go there. Okay. So let's just settle in. And if you're listening to this recording, try and follow the pattern I just suggested, and then come back, and there'll be more things to say afterwards. So finding that comfortable position. Tune into that sense of self again. Tune into what these phrases mean for you. And then start repeating the phrases for self. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. So, anything at all you'd like to share or say, just turn on your mic and we'll. I'm really curious, especially about how it felt to have thoughts of loving kindness towards this person you chose. But don't, as always, don't feel that any obligation to speak. I also always want to add that. Go ahead, Jane.
So I found it quite difficult because normally people that, I don't get on with or whatever, I kind of like put them out of my mind. It was quite difficult to kind of think about them on purpose. Do you know what I mean?
Well, for sure. That's part of the difficulty. But when you say you put them out of your mind, it means you put them out of your mind, but they come back anyway, right?
Yeah. When you see them, you're like, oh no.
So that didn't work. Putting them on your
No.
mind doesn't work.
Oh yeah,
So
no, it's not a good thing, but yeah.
this is a different way to work with it. That's all, I guess.
Yeah, it was I'm glad I chose an easy, difficult person.
Well, that I'm glad you took my advice. It's like it's definitely where to start is to, and then see how that changes over time, and then gradually you can deal with some of the more difficult people you have the largest amount of difficulty with. We can't, excluding none. We can't leave anybody. That's the temptation. It's like, well, I can do this for everyone, but not her.
Yeah.
Not him, not them, and we when that thought arises, that's like the red warning light is flashing brightly in your mind, like, oh wait, there's a line where I have to learn to get across.
Yeah, so it was interesting.
Okay, thank you, Jane.
I can share just because you said you work with a less difficult than more difficult person. I worked with my youngest son, but he's not difficult. It's just that it's a difficult period right now. So it was easy in a sense because it's just that there's a period he's going through, and he's not taking it out on me, but whatever. I'm just saying. So he definitely, my beloved youngest son, he's a difficult person, but it's just a patch, difficult patch. So that's all. If I went to a difficult person, would probably be more my ex-husband. So, which is also all right. But then I've
Well,
done work. I've done a lot of
definitely.
work there, so that's also okay. But anyway.
Yeah, that's definitely someone we got to work with, our exes, for sure. Because there's always stories there.
Right.
Yeah, but
Thank
I but
you.
probably good to start with someone simpler. That's, other people.
I found that the place that I would get caught, like I could say the phrases, but then when I started to think about what those phrases mean for this specific person, is when I would get into story land, shall we say, and have to check myself.
Yeah, and what particularly, which one of the phrases was the trigger?
For this particular, may you be happy. I was like, what does it mean for this person to be happy? And then I would get stuck with that. But then I would also find, like, may you be at ease, like this particular person I think of, like, frequently, I think through fear or something, says bad things about other people a lot. And in my head, that person living at ease is no longer having that thing. But I can't tell if that's like, me wishing my own thoughts of happiness or being at ease on the other people, or is it, this is what the Buddha teaches as like, people who live at ease, like these are the traits that you should try to embody. And therefore it's okay for me to wish that these people have these particular traits. Like, do you know what I'm trying to
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. The may I know may I be happy is one I've got stuck on, because it's like, what they do to make themselves happy is what makes me crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's so it's and we have to go, no, we have to sort of go back to the generic what it means to be happy, which is to have these four things in their life. Think if you if this person had was really felt safe, at ease, felt healthy, felt happy in the broad generic sense, how different they might be. And
Okay, true.
they're sometimes the people we, they're not they don't they're not They don't have those things, and that's why they're so difficult.
Yeah, okay. So that's actually okay for me to like envision them, not feeling the need to insult other people all the time to
Yeah.
be happy. That's okay.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Other thoughts, questions, comments?
Yeah, I found it an interesting process. As somebody else mentioned, it helped me to not pick the person that I had the most difficulty with. Somebody, And I picked a person that I've actually been fairly close to, and we had a falling out, and I developed a resentment towards this person, and we haven't communicated for a while. So that and thinking good thoughts helped, and or things that they that she does well, and but it was interesting. I just kind of got lost in thought, and I was thinking, well, maybe I should call this person. And
Be
it may have
careful.
occurred to
Be
me.
careful with that.
Okay.
No, just because we start to sort of change, and maybe it would be skillful, but maybe it's just because we're starting to feel really good about them, and we really like them. Sounds like you did at one point really like this person, and we think it'll be okay, and then you might be setting yourself up to get caught in turmoil again. That's all. I'm just be careful that the thoughts that arise out of metta don't lead you to thinking something's going to be different than it is.
Right.
It's territory we have to be careful of. That's all.
Yeah, I was thinking more in terms of just reconnecting,
Yeah,
maybe
yeah.
letting the, since we haven't spoke for a while, maybe just calling her up and saying hello.
Yeah. Hi. How?
But
That's just.
anyway, yeah.
I understand what you're saying, and
But
I just.
I get what you're
Well,
saying too, that it could be opening another can of worms too,
yeah. Just I was just waving the yellow warning flag. That's all.
yeah. Okay. Thank you. I have also found in the past, it's not exactly the same thing when I develop a resentment towards somebody. To pray for them in a more generic way to get some to kind of change the channel. I
And
get in
that's
that cycle of resentment where I'll just go round and round and round about, how terrible this is and the situation, and it's invariably a, starts with fear. I mean, I may be angry towards them, may have an argument, but it's invariably fear-based, but sometimes it does give me a little space. It has given me a little space and kind of changes the channel for me.
And prayer for someone is a form of well wishing. Maybe a little less formal than this practice, but
Right, yes.
perfectly skillful. Absolutely skillful.
Well, thank you.
Okay. Sounds like we've exhausted the comments and questions for tonight. I do have a tiny bit of poetry, and then I'll do a formal closing. This is from Hafiz, who is my favorite Sufi poet, and it's from a book called The Gift. And it's about forgiveness. Interestingly, it's called When the Violin. He uses interesting images sometimes. When the violin can forgive the past, it starts singing. When the violin can stop worrying about the future, you will become such a drunk, laughing nuisance that God will lean down and start combing you into his hair. When the violin can forgive every wound caused by others, the heart starts singing. That's all we want to do. We want to have our hearts singing. Like I said, next week I'll actually spend the whole day, the whole evening talking about forgiveness and actually teaching very precise forgiveness practices, which I've found very useful in my life and I like to teach. And it isn't a formal part of metta, but it's very much related to metta and especially this particular category. So I thought I'd take a night and just focus on that and share my thoughts and my love of doing that sort of form of practice. Other than that, may the beneficial energies arising from our practice here together today become the causes and conditions for the end of suffering and the awakening of all beings everywhere. So just a reminder, in terms of your formal practice at home, which of course you're all doing, he says casually, make sure you don't leave out the difficult categories. The ones that are the most difficult for you are often the ones that are going to be the most fruitful. Understanding that you get caught in the whirlwind mind, it's okay to do a little bit of it and then step back and then do a little bit more of it. See how that works. But don't It's easy to turn this practice into feeling good because all I'm going to do is my benefactor and my dear friend. That's it. That's my meta practice. Well, yeah, that's nice. It makes you feel good, but it isn't really doing what we're talking about doing here, which is changing our patterns. It's just reinforcing the sweet ones, which is okay, but it isn't really efficacious in the long term. So don't forget to hang out with the difficult parts too. Whether it's, maybe, so for some people, by the way, remember, difficulty is the self. Maybe I got to hang out with that one for a while. Don't leave that one out either. Oh, I don't need that. Oh, that's a good reason to do it. And when you think that, so just be careful as you do your regular practice that you do a good mixture of categories. And it might be that some days you have more emphasis on one and more emphasis on another the next day. It doesn't have to be every day it's exactly the same. But make sure you practice. Other than that, I'll see you all again soon, as they say.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.